No.
Oh,
boy, dear.
I think she's actually hurt.
No,
there.
I think she is.
Yeah, she's
Ouch.
Hurt. She took a hard fall off there.
Okay.
Boy, gosh, I hope she's okay.
I've decided I really enjoy having guest co-hosts in studio with me. Because when they hear the grape lady for the first time, it's always interesting to see their reaction. Got Michael Sean Dugar in here with me from The Athletic, and it was a quizzical look.
Yeah, what was that?
So we start probably for about the last year. We've started off with the grape lady and
the
Biggie.
Grape lady.
Yeah, this is the grape lady we call it. So you know how like if you turn in Q13, tune into them in the morning. Like, you know, they got the morning show going on, mm-hmm. and they'll have somebody maybe on location. They've all these local news stations in a morning show. They've got like the wacky, you know, they go out, they do the kind of the crazy stories,
right? Yeah.
So this was that for one station somewhere. I don't even know where. And so their correspondent, she went out to basically a grape stomping, like a winery. They're stomping grapes or whatever. It's like a grape stomping competition. This video is out there. It's like real popular. Like it was a viral video. So she's covering it, and she stomps and stomps, tries to show off, and then she falls.
Into the grapes?
No, she fell like out of the grape stomping vat and then fell onto the ground.
But like, it was from an elevated platform.
Like from distance.
Oh no.
And this is the reason. That's what it sounded like.
Oh, no.
I think she's actually hurt.
No, I think she is.
Yeah, she's
Ouch.
Hurt. She took a hard fall off there.
Okay. Boy,
gosh, I hope she's okay.
We'll look up the video in the break.
Yeah, no, I definitely will. It's like that scene from Dodgeball. Like, Ouch Town, population like, you, bro.
Population you, bro. Exactly. Okay, real quick. This is the Puck and Slick Show brought to you by Redbox, a smarter way to watch and play. We coming to you from the Team Dave Caraway Windermere Real Estate Studios for one more day. CarawayTeam.com. We got headlines. Headlines brought to you by VenueKings.com. It wasn't a whole lot going on last night to have headlines, but I got a couple for you. Right here on KJR, we aired the Islanders getting absolutely waxed by the Lightning, 8-0 in hockey. It's like unheard of. Tampa Bay is now one win away from advancing to defend their Stanley Cup. Meanwhile, tonight at 6, the Canadiens face off against the Golden Knights. That series is tied 2-2. The Mariners, no game last night. They'll be in interleague play tonight against the Colorado Rockies. Chris Flexen will toe the rubber for the M's. Kyle Freeland, who has been horrible since returning from the IL, will get the ball for the Rockies. No NBA last night either, which is the first time in like months. But tonight, Clippers and Suns, game 2 in the Western Conference Finals in Phoenix. And finally, a bit of bad news. Former Seahawks defensive end Frank Clark was arrested on weapons possession charges when an Uzi was allegedly found in his back seat during a routine traffic stop. That's the story. So, all right. I already mentioned we got Michael Sean Dugar. He's in here. He covers the Seahawks for the Athletic. Does a tremendous job. I mean, he leads the Athletic basketball team. Mm-hmm. You know, he has the delusions of grandeur. Everything we talk about as far as that team and beating the Seahawks or competing with them, that's all his brainchild. And so we talk about him behind his back a lot. I appreciate you being here. I think you're too nice, too agreeable. Because, I mean, this is your second appearance on the radio station today.
Yeah.
For somebody who doesn't work here. So I don't know, man. I don't know. You were raised right, I guess. You're just too nice. And I don't know. If I was you, I'd be telling us to buzz off by about
I'm
now.
Just trying to help you guys. Because, you know, when I'm on, you know, I get the family listening. Like, my mom's probably listening right now.
Good.
She calls everybody and says, hey, you know, son's on the radio. There you go. So I'm doing this for y'all. It's public service.
That's great. Okay, so she'll be able to, today, she'll listen to y'all show on today. And then Friday, you'll be back. And then we'll do it all over again on Friday. But so I'm excited that you're here. We're gonna have a lot of fun. Big show today, by the way, especially the 11 o'clock hour. We'll talk to John Canzano as we always do. A lot of news kind of going on right now in NCAA. This Supreme Court ruling that we got to get into, and then the meetings that just broke up about expanding the college football playoffs. So we'll
I
get
like
into,
it.
Yeah, we'll get into all that with John Canzano at 11. And then 11:30, J.P. Crawford is coming on with us. So he'll be joining us from Colorado ahead of that game. And J.P.'s just kind of lighting the world on fire. You yourself, I know you like to go to Mariners. I saw you at a Mariners game.
Yes.
As a matter of fact.
I sat in the Diamond Club.
I know. I was going to say. So that's something. I've never done that. So you up in here, you're all high and mighty.
I had no idea the Diamond Club was even a thing until that day. I had no clue.
So I ran. So I was at a game and I just saw on Twitter that you happened to be, you were just Diamond Club living. And so I popped over to see you. I crouched down. I was definitely not supposed to be in the Diamond Club. I think they're about to throw me out. But but I saw you and said, how did you end up in the Diamond Club? And who do I need to know that I can get down there?
One of my homies, his girlfriend works. I forget who she works for, but she hooked it up. So she said it was funny. She was sexting me and my girlfriend because we all went together. And she was like, hey, you know, we're going to be on TV. And I was like, okay, maybe she works in promotions or something. And we're going to do like a name as many Mariners as you can in 30 seconds and win a sticker on the big board. I was like, oh, okay, whatever. And then we get there. She's like, oh, those are our seats. right there. You mean over there where someone brings me food? And when I found out the food was free.
Yeah.
And it was like that scene in Like Mike when Bow Wow discovers room service and Morris Chestnut is telling him like, hey, yeah, no, man, just pick up dial 6 for free.
And they're just going to bring it?
Yeah, for free. That was me. And then I found out the beers were free. I'm a big Rainier guy. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah, so it was great.
You are a Northwest guy. Man.
Yeah, yeah.
This is good. No, I pulled you in. Now, the last time you did a co-hosting gig was with Softy and Softy and Dick show. And that's, you know, that's a Husky show.
Yeah.
You know, this, you know, Puck's a Coug. This is a Coug show. Of course, I'm an Oregon fan. I'm a Duck, but I'm very Coug positive, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. So yeah, we don't have any beef with you guys. Right?
No, and we don't have any with you. And the enemy and my enemy is my friend, of course. And so I've always been down with the Cougs. You know, you guys know how to party.
That's just a fun time.
You know, just everything's kind of surrounding the Cougs, you know, is an enjoyable thing. And again, you know. You guys are against the Dogs, so how can I be against you?
Yeah, no, I was talking to a coach over there for Oregon like a couple weeks ago. We were just joking about just football. We had no beef. You know, I brought up that we beat you guys 4 years in a row, but then when the streak got snapped, I had to wear a duck suit to the Seahawks facility. So it's like, it's even. You know, I enjoyed those 4 years, beat them on game day, which was great, but that irrational confidence led to me buying a duck suit on Amazon.
Yeah, well, you knew that streak had to come to an end.
Yeah, and I just didn't think it would cost me like my dignity for a few hours.
Sure.
That hurt. But still, I'd rather that than, you know, any bet I would lose to Softy. Like, I would never want to lose
it. Yeah, don't let him get into it because he'll come up with some wacky stuff. And especially if you guys are doing Apple Cups, it's just.
Yeah, it's got to be Apple Cups.
Yeah, and you know that has not gone well for you guys lately. And so. Although, I'm root like hell for you every time.
Yeah, no, I'm irrationally confident. We want to talk about delusions of grandeur. My confidence in us winning Apple Cups every year, I don't feel good about it until, let's say the game's on November 25th. Uh-huh. I don't feel good about it really until, like, November 24th. And I'm just like, bring it on. Bring it on. Whoever, whatever. It doesn't matter the record. And then by, like, the morning of November 26th, I need a bunch of Advil and whatever.
Well, at least it's no longer Leach versus Pete. You know, this is, and we were robbed of it last year. But we get to see, I mean, it's going to be a whole new thing. You got to think. We got Rolovich on one side, and you got Jimmy Lake on the other.
The Dark Lord, Jimmy Lake.
It's going to be probably a whole new thing.
You guys had Joe Fan on, right?
Yeah.
Shout out to the homie Joe. I hooped with his team last week at the Salvation Army in West Seattle. Joe's team is full of a bunch of tall white guys who can shoot. very, very, very good team.
They can always shoot, can't they?
That team was good. We had the second half comeback. But anyway.
Maybe they can give Ben Simmons some pointers.
Joe can definitely shoot better than Ben Simmons. Like, I'm not even joking.
And, he'll actually pull up.
Yeah, Joe hit like 5-6 threes in that game last week. But Joe had a tweet like last week, and he's like, what team do you hate the most?
Yeah.
Or something like that. I didn't respond, but I was going to reply that like any team that either Softy roots for or that Jimmy Lake coaches. Like, that was going to be the one. But then I realized Softy also roots for the Mariners, and I have a Mariners tattoo. So, like, I'm a Mariners fan. Yeah, so, like, but yes, definitely any team Jimmy Lake coaches is like my answer to Joe's question.
You have actual Mariners ink.
Yeah, I have a Mariners tattoo over my heart. Yes.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, I do. I actually literally do on my chest. Yeah.
So at the root of it, you're a baseball guy.
Yeah. Well, I'm a Seattle guy.
Okay.
Yeah, I try and like baseball, but baseball doesn't really like me back. That's the thing about
you're
Mariners,
not alone.
Mariners fandom. Yeah, it's very. I told you before we hopped on, I was like, yeah, I kind of tuned out when they went on that little run and couldn't hit.
Mm-hmm.
And I tuned back in. I was like, oh, yeah. They're good. And then I checked their run differential last night. Like, whoa, all right, this is going to get ugly again. This is setting up for disappointment. You know, I one of my friends was at the game over the weekend. She hit me and she's like, baseball's good. Like, we were so happy.
Yeah.
And then in a month, we could have that same convo and we'd both probably be devastated.
Well, sure. I mean, when it's a young team, a rebuilding team, it's kind of, I mean, I expected a roller coaster season. I picked them to be, you know, at 82 wins. So that's one win above, you know, going 500 plus one, mm-hmm. as I call it. So that's just kind of what I expected from them. But I think things are trending up, you know, and like I said, we're having J.P. Crawford on at 11:30. And that's a big indicator to me that things are going well, just because he is somebody who they've kind of, you know, they've circled as can be part of the solution, part of the answer long term, I think. And it's got to be guys like that that they've identified and mm-hmm. brought in that they want to be in. J.P. Crawford, Yusei Kikuchi, who's having a really good year. He was somebody else. I mean, he was the first real money that they spent that's supposed to be kind of in the new wave of Mariners. It's going to be, you know, this wave that's going to be coming up in the next couple of years and hopefully contending in 23 and 24 and all that. So, you know, what J.P. Crawford's doing right now, you know, taking hold of that leadoff spot and everything, that's a good sign, I think, for what this rebuild process is becoming.
Look at all that optimism over there.
I know,
I can smell it.
I'm full of it, yes.
That's why Mariners fandom, it hurts so much. They even give it a shot because, yes, it's optimism, things are going well.
Yeah.
And then, like, you see a tweet like, so-and-so's out for the year.
Well, yeah, injuries have been a problem.
It just hurts all over again.
And it's just because, you know, again, I said, 82 wins this year. So it's not like I'm planning on a playoff berth this year, which is, that's frustrating just because, for Mariners fans, just because, you hear be patient. We've been hearing be patient for the last 15 years, you know, as they've tried to churn this thing over again and again and again. But, you know, you were on the morning show today, and I think Chuck kind of breaks it down really well how different this rebuild has been versus maybe other swings that they've taken at it before, where, you know, they kind of halfway dip their toes in the rebuild water and wanting to get young, but then they throw money at, you know,
yeah, like playing for now and playing for the future at the same time.
Yeah,
you can't really do that.
Yeah, it's got to be one or the other. And so I think they've kind of gone about this the right way, and so I don't know, we'll see if the young guys hit, and you know if they pop and they sign some dudes in free agency in a couple of years. I mean,
there you go.
Know, it
the
could
optimism.
Be good.
There's
it could
the
be
optimism.
Good.
So you're saying there's a chance.
I'm hoping. Yeah, I think there's a good chance. I mean, it's kind of a proven formula here. Michael Sean Dugar from The Athletic. And at some point, probably in the next segment, matter of fact, we're going to talk some Seahawks stuff. But real quick, the NBA playoffs. I know that's you pay attention to the NBA.
Yeah. I'm a big basketball guy.
Like,
I'm full-on nerd. I mean, my company employs Hollinger, who I think invented, like, the PER stat. I'm all in on the nerdiness of the analytics, watching tape.
Sure.
I love basketball.
Oh, watching tape and all that. I just, you know, kind of watch the game.
I follow guys who watch and grind a lot of tape and stuff
that.
Sometimes this one dude, I'm not going to shout out his account because he's doing it illegally, but he'll like post the entire game
uh-huh.
after on YouTube. And I used to watch those with the homie Jacob Thorpe.
I
used to cover the Kooks for Spokesman.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, yeah, no, I love basketball. That's why it hurts to watch what the Sixers are doing right now. Dude who won't shoot.
I'm sure you, then, you know, as big into hoops as you are, I'm sure you predicted Bucks. And Bucks and Hawks?
I did have Bucks. I thought you? The Bucks would beat the Nets.
Uh-huh.
Fully healthy, I thought they actually would beat them.
Yeah.
Because I thought that they had defenders
mm-hmm.
to make it tough on the, like, if you look at, I mean, look at the playoffs for a second here, guys. Teams who win in the playoffs hit hard shots.
Yeah.
That's really just what it is. Kyrie hits hard shots. James hits hard shots. KD, they all hit hard shots. KD's mm-hmm. look a little easier than James and Kyrie, but you get my point. Now PJ Tucker, you look at him, he makes you take hard shots. If you hit him, you hit him. Like that shot KD hit to send it to overtime.
Right.
That's just a hard shot. You got to live with that. Why can you live with that? Because he had that same shot in overtime to win and missed it. Airballed
mm-hmm.
it. You can just live with forcing guys to make hard shots. So I thought the Bucks had a chance in that regard. I also didn't think Chris Middleton would stink every time he played in Brooklyn.
True.
Jesus, he shot like 30% in Brooklyn, shot like 53% in Milwaukee. That's un- yeah, well, that's unreal.
It helps that PJ Tucker did know Kevin Durant's shoe size.
I know, I felt so bad for him. What does he wear, like 18?
Yeah, something like that.
Oh,
only, man. What, 6'11", so.
Oh, man, that's brutal. But no, I did not expect the Hawks. Yeah. I didn't think you could build around an undersized guard who doesn't play defense the mm-hmm. way that the Hawks have. That has been very, very, very refreshing.
Well, I was gonna say. That's kind of what Golden State did, but they had other role players, and they play good defense.
Well, then what they did was they built. They got other defenders. They went and got Iggy. They went and got Clay. They went and got Draymond. They had Looney. They had Bogut. They had like, all right. So we only have one guy on the court who can't defend.
Yeah.
We'll just have him score 30. Whereas like there's some other, like the Hawks run a lineup out there with like Trae Young and Lou Will, and that's just inviting layups.
And a great system too. I mean, all those Warrior teams. I mean, they had effort guys. You know, the guys you mentioned, too, especially on the defensive end. And then in the West, Clippers and Suns, which, man, all those Lob City Clippers teams that you expected to get this far and never did. And now you've got a Clippers team. And you're thinking, well, at least they got Kawhi. Well, Kawhi is out, you know, with his injury and everything. So it's a Clippers team that nobody recognizes. It's just wild that this is the Clippers team that finds themselves
with
in the Western Conference Finals.
Pandemic P. Pandemic P. I felt so bad for him last year because, mm-hmm. like, we're having really, I think, what are important conversations about, like, mental health. Kevin Love has been at... I think DeMar DeRozan as well. Like, those are the two that come to mind in the NBA. Meanwhile, Paul George is like, yeah, you know, the bubble, I'm just not mentally right here. You know, something. And everyone's just making jokes.
Sure,
I was like, wait a minute. I thought we were, talking about anxiety and isolation and, you know, feeling depressed. It's like, no.
Depends on who it comes from.
Exactly. LeBron has talked about that too, like the stress of being in the bubble and what that did to some guys. And it's just, we were just, nah, LeBron, like, suck it up. You know, it's just like, well, that's unfair. Now, LeBron, he got his championship. But yeah, we just made jokes about Paul George all year when he was like, no, man, I was not right mentally. And I'm like, nope, we're going to get these jokes off, buddy, until you shoot better from the field.
So that's been interesting. Devin Booker's been fun to watch. You got to feel good for Chris Paul right now.
The resurgence of Chris, not resurgence, but like Chris Paul and Jimmy Butler are really good. I just like watching them because everywhere they go, the team gets better, you know, like, and it gets tougher. And I mean, they eventually wear out their welcome a little bit because like Jimmy Butler and Chris Paul are hard to play with as much as they are fun to play with because they'll tell you you stink and, you know, get your, you know, stuff together. But like watching them wherever they go, the other team has a chance to like really compete. Yeah. I do like that because ultimately that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to help make your teammates better. If you got to cuss them out every once in a while, sure. But I like that too.
And LeBron will do that. He'd be the first example.
See, he's passive aggressive though. Like,
yeah, but he'll cuss them out.
Yeah, but then he'll like subtweet you or something like that or make an Instagram post that's like kind of about you, kind of not. I don't like that. You can tell he hangs out with Drake.
LeBron is an interesting, look, I've been a LeBron fan his whole career. But even for somebody like me, who, I mean, ardently defends LeBron and everything, like, he's making it hard on even the biggest LeBron fans right now. Just, I mean, especially this last year, this last playoffs, you know, walking off, doing and all that and everything.
I don't mind the walking off.
I do. Walking off on your team, the game's still going on, you're the leader of your team, and you head to the locker room. That for me, I mean, that... You know, you got to be a team guy. This is a team you built.
Yeah, I guess your team, yeah.
Yeah, it's
I
don't a mind, team you built and you're out. Walking out on them.
I don't mind walking out on the other team. Like with the Pistons, I'm rewatching The Last Dance.
Yeah,
that's why it's fresh
in
my head.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't have minded that. Like, Michael Jordan, like, get over it, dude. Yeah, you
I don't mind that as much, but walking out on your team.
Yeah, no, that's bad.
So
yeah.
That
especially when half of those guys are signed to Clutch.
Yeah,
that's right. Like half the Lakers are signed to Clutch Sports. You got to stay out there, man. Those are your clients, bro.
Well, if they really matter, they would have been in the new movie.
No, I would be. No, like I'm not. I don't really get jealous or things like that. Territorial. Like if something happens for my friends, I'm generally happy about that. But it's like, hey, man, if you make a Space Jam 2 and we homies and you don't put me in the movie and I ask, it's like,
give me a
man.
Cameo. Let me play a referee or an alien or something.
I just wanted one scene with Bugs Bunny. That's all I want. Like, I feel like that's like not too much to ask.
Me and Bugs. Know? Put me on a green screen.
Yeah, one convo with Bugs. That's all I need.
We got Michael Sean Dugar in all show long. Like I mentioned, J.B. Crawford at 11:30, John Canzano at 11 o'clock. We're going to jump into the Seahawks news coming out of minicamp. And then there is some brand new, but this just came across it as Seahawks news that I'm going to give to you. If you are a 12th man, any 12s out there listening, this news directly pertains to you. You're going to want to hear this. I'll tell you what it is next. I'm Puck and Slick, presented by Redbox, Sports Radio 950, KJ.
All in one app.
All right, back here at Sports Radio 950 KJR, Puck and Slick Show presented by Redbox. Michael Sean Dugar from The Athletic with us. And, of course, we come from the Team Dave Caraway Windermere Real Estate Studios. You can check them out at carawayteam.com if you got real estate questions or needs. Mentioned that we had some breaking news from the Seahawks. Twelves, if you're looking to go to the game this year, good news for you. The Seahawks have just announced full capacity for the upcoming season for all the home games. So full capacity at Lumen Field. Mm-hmm. That's new for me. Look, man, this is obviously huge, especially for Seattle, which, you know, the home field advantage is well documented. It's interesting to me because, you know, the last few years, I would say maybe 2016, 2017, up until 2020 when they couldn't have fans because of the pandemic, there just had been a palpable, I mean, you talk to fans that go to games and they'll tell you, there's just been a difference. It hasn't been, the fervor hasn't been there, and I don't know if it's complacency or what it is. I mean, if there's, you know, when you win so much and it just becomes kind of second nature, but there hasn't been that tenacity, that real, I mean, you, and it shows in the home record too, in the stands. It hasn't been that full spitfire that it usually is, but you know, you don't know what you got till it's gone. That's what they say, right?
We
got
to get the Suns and Four dude at a Seahawks game.
Oh, no, there's plenty of those guys. You know, check out the Hawks Nest. Don't believe me. There's plenty of those guys. But the noise hasn't been the same, and it's just been different. Being forced to take a year off where fans couldn't go to the games, I think when they come back, I think you're going to get the real 12th man, the real advantage back.
Well, I think that there have been some, like, games in spurts where, like, I'd say the 2017 Houston game was ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Like, here, I think Russ threw for, like, 425. Yeah. Deshaun threw for, like, 400.
Yeah.
Jimmy Graham caught the game winner on the final play. Like, it was insane. Mm-hmm. Like, that was when the press box shook when Jimmy Graham scored. That was, like, one of my first games. I was like, oh, this is outstanding. 2018 Thursday Night Football against the Packers. Rasheem Green has like a big sack against Aaron Rodgers. Ed Dixon catches the game winner. Mm. There's a theme here with tight ends, I guess, catching game winners. That was like nuts. And then Marshawn's return in Sunday Night Football in Week 17. That was probably like, because I didn't cover, I was in Pullman for Legion of Boom Prime, so I didn't actually come to any games with the full Legion of Boom really until I was covering the team. That night, I was like, oh, this is what must have been what that was like. When Marshawn's first carry, it felt like the place was going to shake. When he came on to the field in the fourth quarter, ultimately got to delay a game. It was terrible. But when he came on the field, though, it felt like it was like in the movie when everything moves slow and there's all these camera angles and everyone's jaw drops in slow motion, which is like a weird, weird thing. But like it felt just like that. Like I loved that. They also lost that game, though, too. So it shows you that even the Rockets
because it moved slow, because there was that delay again. I mean, that cost you that game, and that was a really, really important game. I want to start there with you, though, because, you know, Shane Waldron comes in, and I think it's the most important acquisition the Seahawks have made this offseason, honestly. And you hear Pete Carroll talk. We'll see what happens in season as far as the reins and how much say-so Shane Waldron has in the whole thing. But it sounds like tempo and speed and doing things quickly, which has not been the MO of the Seahawks offenses in the past.
Correct.
It sounds like tempo is the watchword. Like that is where everything starts. And so, you know, getting into the huddle faster, getting the call faster, getting to the line faster, getting the ball to Russ's hands faster. Everything is speed and tempo is what it sounds. I mean, is that what you get out of all this?
Somewhere Chip Kelly's like, I don't know, guys.
I mean, it doesn't have to be breakneck speed. Like,
yeah, that's the thing. Well, that was the issue there was plenty of issues there. I mean, Shockey probably knows. Like, there's a lot of issues in that Philly run with Chip Kelly, and 99ers fan knows too. But like at the core of that was if you go fast, you have to be effective.
Mm-hmm.
You're an Oregon fan.
Yeah.
That's what worked at Oregon.
Yes.
They were getting first downs.
Right.
If they were just getting three and outs, it doesn't matter if your drive's only 20 seconds or whatever, how fast you come out there out of the huddle. So I think, I mean, Tom Cable used to talk about that with tempo too, because he was the run game coordinator as well as the O-line coach. Bevel used to talk about that. We talked about him with tempo. Look, yeah, it's fine until we get a sack. then moving fast isn't as important as getting the first down.
Yeah.
So I think that's the problem that Shane Waldron is probably going to run into initially. I think the where he's different than Tom Cable and Bevel and even Shoddy is the O-lines are better.
Mm-hmm.
So because a sack kills your drive. I don't care if you're moving at the speed of light or like a sloth. Right, you get a sack, you get a fumble, things like that. So I do think that is in the plans. I'm with you. I think they are going to try and get the ball out quicker and all that stuff. But I do think I kind of want to like tip of the expectations here because
well, you're talking about the Mike Tyson philosophy, basically. Everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the mouth, kind
of
thing.
On top of that, like tempo is not a novel concept. You know, it's like you think Daryl Bevel didn't want to get the ball out faster. No, man, his quarterback was back there dancing for a while. Right? Mm-hmm. I rewatched Super Bowl 49.
Why?
Why? Because Doug Baldwin was on my homie's podcast from London. My homies Adam and Stu, the London Seahawkers, the Pedestrian Pod, and he talked about. He said I was cooking Darrell Revis the whole game. Go back and watch. And I was like, man, didn't Doug have one catch in that game? Not to say he was wrong, but I just didn't remember Doug going off, and he didn't. He had one catch. But I watched the all 22 while I was watching the game. I was like, man, Russ is holding the ball a long time with cats open, and it just kind of shows like that's what Daryl was dealing with. Like you can call tempo all the time, you can call whatever you want. Russ controls where the ball goes and when it comes out.
Sure.
Like that's very important to remember. So while I am optimistic about the Shane Waldron experience to some extent, I do think it cannot be underestimated. Russell's role in where the ball goes, like, you know, people complain about tight end usage. Russell controls where it goes and how fast it comes out. Shane can do nothing about that other than call the play. And even then, Russ can change the play. So, like, yes, while Shane will matter, I'm with you that he's probably has the potential to be the most influential acquisition of the offseason. They still have Russell. He dominated the headlines this year for a reason. He is in control of the offense for the most part, especially what year 1,000 that he's in. Like, his role in this matters a lot, and that will dictate the tempo.
Mm-hmm.
Just as much as Shane's philosophy.
Well, and he's somebody, Russell is, that's always pushed the idea of tempo. I mean, he mentions it often, you know, that he wants to be faster and he wants to do things faster. He wants that tempo. And so, I mean, for a guy who, you know, went on national radio and went in front of you guys during his Walter Payton Man of the Year press conference and talked about wanting to get hit less, you would think he'd be the first person to sign up for getting the ball out faster.
Yeah, well, and you talk to people who we have. I'm gonna shout out more people here. Nate Tice was Russ's backup. I want to say at Wisconsin, and he co-hosts a podcast on the Athletic football show with Robert Mays. And like they don't only talk about Russ; they talk about all football. But Nate's very good. A, he was a quarterback. A, he played with Russ. His dad was a coach. Nate's coach before. He understands quarterback play, and he understands Russ's play in particular. And if you listen to him and other people who know Russ really well, like quick throws and short stuff, that's timing. You know, that you got to want to do that stuff. Like Tom Brady excels at that. That's what he wants to do. He wants to do that. That's why I said when I rewatched Super Bowl 49 and other games from that season as well that I've went back and looked at, it's a rhythm thing. You got to want to do that. You got to have the sight lines as a quarterback. This is where the height thing does matter a smidge. Like I do think the quarterback, how many Pete coordinators has Pete had now?
This is his fourth.
Right, and this is Russ's third.
Like, yeah.
The quarterback is staying the same, so the offense will only change but so much.
Sure.
So I know Russ is in favor of it, but you can't just be running up and down the field and not, you know, getting first downs or whatever, or holding the ball too long because you want to get a shot play to DK and then get a sack and Dwayne Brown's all upset about you. I think there's a soundbite of that from the Vikings game a few years ago. Like I said, I'm optimistic, and Russ is on board too, but there needs to be, I think Russ is, his buy-in to the tempo thing needs to be legit. Like he's going to have to ultimately change his game like to make this work. Will he? I don't know. Maybe he wants to win. He'd probably do whatever. He'd probably throw the ball with his elbow if he knew that would get him a Super Bowl. But that's, I think, as important as whatever Shane's philosophy is.
You talked about Dwayne Brown there. He's got a contract issue that came up here in minicamp that we didn't necessarily know about. And then we have a Jamal Adams contract situation that we did know about. We'll jump into those here next. More Seahawks talk with Michael Sean Dugar here on Puck and Slick. Sports Radio 950 KJ. Jets. Puck and Slick, presented by Redbox. Puckett, of course, on vacation, off to Yellowstone. Michael Sean Dugar sitting in. Don't forget, 12:30. We do it every week. We'll be doing it once again. We'll be auctioning off the studio naming rights from 10 to 1 for the next week.
Oh, really? That's dope.
And of course, all the money is going right to the Ronald McDonald House. All the money that we've raised. We raised over $11,000 so far in these last 13 weeks. And so I could say things like this. Dave and Danny Caraway of Windermere Real Estate is the real estate team you can count on for honesty, integrity, and fast results. Serving Puget Sound buyers and sellers for 21 years, they simply get the job done and protect you throughout the process. And that is why we come to you right now from the Team Dave Caraway Windermere Real Estate Studios. You can check them out at carawayteam.com or give them a call at 425-890-2728. That is information that we will put out every day for you for the next week. All you have to do is call in at 12:30 and bid on having the naming the studio naming rights for the next week. And again, it all goes to a great cause over the Ron McDonald House. With Michael Sean Dugar from The Athletic, does as good a job as anybody covering any NFL team, but he covers the Seahawks right here in town. I know you did kind of a deep dive on Dwayne Brown recently, which plays right into what we're going to talk about next, because at mandatory minicamp, the news came out that he's looking for a new deal. He's entering the last year of his contract that he was on. I believe the Seahawks extended him, or they did something with his contract.
3-year deal, 34.
There you go. After getting him from Houston, so the last year of that, and I don't know. It sounds like maybe the Seahawks thought he would be kind of done after this year, or maybe reevaluating things. So maybe they were caught off guard. But sounds like he wants to play beyond this year. Look, he's, 35 years old now?
He'll be 36 in August.
So, I don't know. I mean, it seems to me like he's still playing at a pretty high level. Is it at the level to where you would extend him another contract at the money that he makes?
I thought, I think Greg Bell is the one who asked Pete, like, hey, did you guys think he was going to retire? Like, what's going on here? And Pete kind of danced around that, which is, so the Stone Forsythe pick, what did they pick, 208th? To get him. So
round.
That could go either way. You could take a guy like that and think, okay, we'll give him a year. You know, he succeeds Dwayne and we kind of just roll with that. Or, I mean, hey, it's a 6th-round pick. Dwayne plays till he's 50. We have like a serviceable backup on the cheap. Like, it could go either way. So I don't know what they thought. I thought he would probably be done because he's right on the edge. Like, if you look at left tackles in this league, even the great ones, the Hall of Fame ones, what was Walter Jones like, 33, 34, when it started to slide, like, Wayne's right there where it's like, you got a year or two, but it doesn't seem like anything past that is going to be at a high level. Not to say he's just going to just fully just stink right away, but it seemed like it'd be gradual. It's like, okay, these left tackle. I mean, you look at the Chase Youngs and stuff that come in the league, like these dudes just come in and they're freaks.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how many of these freaks can you handle in a 17-game season now? Remember that, too. That's going to destroy some guys' bodies in a different way. So I would really want to know how much longer he wants to play. Because let's say he wants to play two more years after this. That would be his age 37 and 38 seasons. It's not inconceivable that he can play well that long.
Yeah.
There's a guy in his division doing it right now. I think Andrew Whitworth is like approximately 77 years old for the Rams. And the Rams have one of the best offensive lines in the league. And they're paying Andrew Whitworth.
Yeah, I do like how he wears his age as his number. Like.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, so he's 77. So I think that Whitworth making 10 mil, being still one of the better left tackles in the league, playing at a high level and got hurt, came back and was a little rough in that Green Bay game, I think. But like just having him there, I think he's one of their captains. I think the Whitworth example gives Dwayne Brown and his representation a legit argument. It's like, look, you can pay my guy until he's 38 and he'll play well until, you know, he's 38. Like, I think that's reasonable, which is probably why him and his agent was like, let's just not practice at minicamp. Let's get this bread. I would probably do it. The problem is going to be the cost. Like, how much do you pay your 37-year-old, 38-year-old left tackle? Like, does he want to be top 10? Well, that's like 15 mil. You want to be top 5? That's like 18 mil.
Ugh.
So how much longer, how many guys can you have on the team making 15 million?
Well, you're going to have one more, certainly after this year, because Jamal Adams, that's another contract issue. Now, this is one that we did foresee. We knew this was going to happen at some point. Pete, in his Pete way, really kind of was dismissive that it would be any kind of an issue. And I think that, you know, they have an idea what realm, what area of money it's going to cost to sign Jamal Adams to an extension. I worry simply because, you know, they missed the mark on Frank Clark and kind of eyeballing the market and what they thought they'd be able to sign him for, because, you know, he was going to probably get about $15, $16 million a year in their mind. And I think it was actually on track for that, maybe $16 million. But then DeMarcus Lawrence signs his big deal, which, I mean, I don't think anybody saw that coming, him signing for that much.
Yeah, it was like $100 million.
Yeah, yeah. He was getting $20 plus million a year right before Frank Clark was going to, you know, they were going to try and extend him. So that blew his market out of the water. I think with Jamal Adams, you know, maybe they're thinking, okay, you're going to get $15, $16 million a year. I think he's thinking, you know, $18, $19 million a year. So I think, you know, they might be far apart there. I don't know how it all shakes out, but, you know, he's somebody, obviously, with the investment they made, they have to work something out. I don't know who has the leverage right now.
It's Jamal. Jamal has it. He's young. He made the Pro Bowl with broken fingers. He broke the sack record for a defensive back with a bad shoulder. Like, yeah, the Seahawks can counter that he was no hurt, but I mean, like, everybody in the NFL like gets hurt. By week 13, everyone's beat to hell. They've been in car accidents for 2 months. Like, it just hurts. It's who can still perform when they are banged up that separates some of these like really good guys from the like excellent guys. And that's where Jamal is. They gave up 2 first-round picks for him. They have like, what are they gonna do? Let him walk?
Right.
You know, that's a position they haven't been drafting well over the years, which is why they had to trade 2 first-round picks for him in the first place. So, you know, I think the problem is gonna be how Jamal sees himself. I shouldn't say problem, because like, he can see himself how he wants. You know, it's how the people who you want to pay you see you. You know, like, if Jamal's like, I'm a weapon, all right, well, cool, there's not really like a weapon salary out there for us to go on, so why don't we just call you a safety? I was like, well, okay, here's 15 million bucks, like, here, you're a safety. It's like, well, wait a minute, now I had more sacks than Khalil Mack last year. So, which he did, I believe. So, like, all right, why don't you pay me like Khalil? I was like, well, you ain't that. You're not Khalil. And so now you get into this tug of war. I think that actually Tyler Lockett's contract could be something nice for Jamal. I think Tyler's at 4 years, 69, with something like that. So if you do 4 years, 70 for someone like Jamal, I think that's 17.5 a year. So you're definitely giving him like, I don't know, like 20% raise on the top of the safety market, but you're also not paying him like a full-time pass rusher like Frank Clark is making, like, because he's not. He's like, that'd be paying him essentially like an elite DB. There you go, Jamal. You're an elite DB. Not a safety, not a weapon. You're an elite DB. Here's $18 million. Go get you a G-Wagon. Or $17.5 will get you a G-Wagon.
Is he an elite DB, though? I mean, is it? Yeah. I mean, in coverage, would you say?
He's an elite defensive back. They all don't just cover. Defensive backs do more. You got to stop the run, too. Like, that's half the game on defense. Like, he is an elite defensive back, I think. Is he an elite coverage guy? Nah, probably not. Not right now. But defensive backs don't only, you know, cover as the middle of the field safety. So yeah, I do think he's elite. No, they shouldn't trade him back. Didn't you say you wanted to trade him?
Sure. What? Yeah, I would have absolutely done that. Oh, I would have gotten whatever you could for him to correct that mistake. Because I think trading 2 first-round picks and a 3rd-round pick and Bradley McDougal for Jamal Adams was a mistake.
But you can't trade him back. Or you can't trade him away. What are you going to get for that?
Like I said, they probably would have got a 2nd-round pick.
That makes it even worse.
I think overpaying him makes it worse. I mean, we can jump into that. We got a break. We could jump into that later on.
Please, let's do that.
We got a packed 11 o'clock hour. John Canzano coming up next. Don't forget, 11:30, we're going to talk to J.P. Crawford as well from the Mariners in Colorado. But, you know, the Pac-12 college football just got done meeting on expanded college football playoffs. We'll get the latest on that from John Canzano from the Oregonian next on Sports Radio 950 KJR.